Now is the moment for Serbia to get concrete about joining our union. My first point is that we need to see progress on the rule of law, the electoral framework, and media freedom. I know these reforms are not easy. They take patience and endurance. My second point is that we need to see greater alignment in our foreign policy, including on sanctions against Russia. I commend you for reaching 61% of alignment with our foreign policy, but more is needed, and we want to count on Serbia as a reliable partner.
This is my video update on this Thursday, midday, October the 16th. Let's talk about some news. And we are going to start things off with a Lavrov interview that was published yesterday in Russian media from Kommersant, which has to do with Trump, the negotiations that took place in Alaska, and the conflict in Ukraine. So Lavrov said that the Alaska process is not finished. Moscow is still waiting for a U.S. response to a proposal made at the summit. Putin, according to Lavrov, went to Alaska with a response to a U.S. proposal by Steve Witkoff. And Putin's message, according to Lavrov, was that Russia accepts the proposal and suggests a specific path for its implementation. Lavrov did not get into the details as to what exactly was in this Witkoff proposal that, according to Lavrov, Russia accepted. But that is what he said. And according to Lavrov, as I mentioned a second ago, as I was reading to you the title of the article from the interview, Russia is waiting for a U.S. response to a roadmap for going forward with this Witkoff proposal that Russia has accepted. So Russia's waiting for Trump's response to their acceptance to Witkoff's proposal, according to the Russian foreign minister. And then Lavrov went on to praise Trump for being the only Western leader that made an effort to understand the Ukraine root causes. Lavrov said that U.S. statements about supplying Ukraine with Tomahawks do not affect understandings reached in Alaska. And he said that Washington faces pressure from Ukraine's backer in Europe. The EU and UK are trying to make the Ukraine conflict Trump's war. So once again, we see the Putin administration say that that Trump is trying to work towards peace, and it is all the Europeans and the UK's fault as far as any escalation that has been taking place since Trump entered office. Trump is looking for peace. He understands the root causes. He's the only leader who understands the root causes and was willing to listen to Russia as they explained the root causes. And he bears no fault, no responsibility for any of the escalation. It is all coming from the European Union and the UK. According to Lavrov, poor Trump is getting pressure from the EU and the UK to escalate. Poor Trump is getting pressure from the EU and the UK to escalate. He wants peace. They're trying to make this into Trump's war. Poor Trump. The EU and the UK, they're trying to make this into his war. And Trump's resisting because he decided to listen to Russia and to listen to the root causes. That is what Lavrov is saying in this interview. And one of the most amazing statements is that that the tomahawks do not affect the understanding that was reached in Alaska. Launching long-range missile strikes into Russia does not affect the understanding that we reached in Alaska. The United States, the U.S. military, launching long-range missile strikes into Russia does not affect the understanding that we reached in Alaska. Okay. That is the position that the Putin administration has decided to take. They have decided to put their full trust and belief in U.S. President Trump. And they believe, they actually believe, and maybe they're right. Maybe they are correct in this. They believe that Trump is going to deliver peace in Ukraine. That he's going to actually take Russia's root causes into consideration, Istanbul Plus, June 2024, and whatever Witkoff presented in Alaska, right? Trump's going to take all of this into consideration, and he's going to work with Russia to deliver root causes, peace in Ukraine, a peace that takes Russia's interests into consideration. They actually believe this. They've bet it all on this belief in Trump. We've seen this play out 100 times in the past, right? Leaders believe in the United States, and they believe in what the U.S. is telling them, and we all know the outcome to this. We all know how this plays out. And Putin is putting all his belief in Trump, man. He's putting it all in Trump. Meanwhile, Hegseth, he's saying that if Russia does not capitulate, then the U.S. will, what did Hegseth say? My God, if Russia does not capitulate, then the U.S. War Department stands ready to do our part in ways that only the United States can do. That is what Hegseth said. If we must take this step, the U.S. War Department stands ready to do our part in ways that only the United States can do. So that's Hegseth's warning to Russia. If this war does not end, if there is no path to peace in the short term, then the United States, along with our allies, will take the steps necessary to impose costs on Russia. Hegseth is saying if Russia does not capitulate, if they do not surrender, if they do not freeze the conflict, if they do not do as we are telling them, then we will impose costs on Russia, the United States, and our allies, the United States, NATO, Ukraine, the collective West. They will impose costs on Russia. This is what Hegseth is telling Russia. And he said this as he was at the defense ministers contact group meeting, the meetings that the United States under Trump the peacemaker said that the United States would not be leading these contact group meetings anymore. They were pulling back from these contact group meetings. The UK was going to take over. Hegseth would only attend via Zoom video, and here we have Hegseth leading the defense ministers meeting in Brussels in NATO, and he is telling Russia, surrender, capitulate, or face our wrath, the wrath of Hegseth, the wrath of the Department of War. So you have what Lavrov is saying, the foreign minister of Russia, and you have what Hegseth is saying, the Secretary of War for the United States. So Trump, what is Trump saying? Well, he spoke to the media yesterday from the Oval Office, and of course he was asked about Project Ukraine and about Zelensky's trip to D.C. and meeting with Zelensky tomorrow. By the way, Zelensky and Ukraine officials, they issued various statements yesterday saying how they are working very closely with the Trump administration Trump is all in, according to Ukraine. Trump is all in with support for Ukraine, and Trump is all in with getting a just peace in Ukraine. When they mean just peace, whenever Zelensky or Ukraine officials or European Union officials mean a just peace, when they use those words, they mean a Russian capitulation. Anyway, Trump is all in with working with Ukraine to get a just peace. And they've been working with Trump, according to the statements from Ukraine, for many weeks, for many months, working with the Trump administration on all level to talk about money to Ukraine, about weapons, sanctions. And all of this is so that a just peace can come in Ukraine. And the Zelensky administration, they praise Trump. They say that all the momentum is now with them, with Ukraine. Trump is fully on board with Project Ukraine and with the Zelensky administration. And yesterday in the Oval Office, Trump mentioned that Zelensky is coming to the White House tomorrow. He's going to be meeting with Zelensky. Actually, Trump has directed many of his officials on multiple levels to hold detailed talks with Ukrainian officials. Zelensky is even slated to meet various members of Congress as well. I'm sure he's going to be meeting Lindsey Graham and hugging Lindsey Graham. I'm sure that Lindsey Graham did not sleep last night, or is not going to sleep tonight. Lindsey Graham is not going to sleep tonight in anticipation of meeting with the Green Goblin and getting a whiff of that Zelensky number five. I'm sure that Lindsey Graham is super duper excited for Zelensky's trip to DC and meeting with Zelensky. But yeah, Trump has basically given orders to his administration, all levels of his administration, to work with Ukraine in their trip to DC tomorrow. And Trump said that Ukraine wants to go on the offensive. He said they definitely want to go on the offensive. And then Trump said that he will determine if Ukraine goes on the offensive, which is an interesting statement. Ukraine wants to launch an offensive, and Trump is going to decide whether he greenlights that offensive. But always remember that Trump is the neutral mediator in all of this. So according to Russia, Trump is the neutral mediator. Boy, did Russia buy into this one. What a diplomatic freaking mistake from the Russian Federation. Man, what a mistake of epic proportions. They completely went along with the United States being the neutral mediator. My God. Anyway, the neutral mediator, U.S. President Trump, the peace president, said he will determine if he greenlights a Ukraine offensive against Russia. He also was asked about other weapons aside from the Tomahawks, and Trump said, "Yeah, absolutely. We're considering all kinds of weapons to go to Project Ukraine. Not only just the Tomahawks, but other weapons as well will be sold. Weapons will be sold to NATO, and then NATO will give those weapons to Project Ukraine, because Trump is neutral in all of this. He just wants the war to end. That's what Trump said. He said he wants the war to end. It's Biden's war, and he's in it just to end it. He said, I'm in it. He said, that's why I'm invested in this. That's why I'm doing this, is because I want the war to end. That's what he told the media yesterday. And he said all kinds of other weapons are on the table and will be discussed in detail with Ukrainian officials. He also said that India has decided to stop buying Russian oil. He said that he spoke to Modi just the other day, and Modi told him that India is going to stop buying Russian oil, which appears to be a lie. At least that's what it appears to be, because the Indian foreign ministry said, India is going to take their national interests into consideration, and they operate in their national interests. And that was a type of indication, a hint, that from the Indian foreign ministry, that what Trump said in the Oval Office about India stopping their purchases of Russian oil was not true. If you go off of the statement from the Indian foreign ministry, they're basically saying, no, Modi did not tell Trump that India is going to stop buying Russian oil. We work off of our national interests. So that is the statement from India. But anyway, Trump said that Modi has told him that India is out of the Russian oil buying business. If you believe Trump, if you believe India, we'll soon find out. And then Trump talked about the Tomahawks. And it does look like Ukraine is going to get Tomahawks. Around 20 to 50 Tomahawks is what Ukraine will initially get. But remember, once you're on the escalation escalator, there is no going down. There's only going up. There is no reverse gear. And the Financial Times, they put out an article with the title, "What Are the U.S. Tomahawk Missiles Trump is Considering for Ukraine?" And in the article, the Financial Times says that the missiles could be delivered relatively quickly with the involvement of American contractors to assist in their use. This would eliminate the need for extensive training of Ukrainian troops and would allow the U.S. to maintain control over targets and other issues. Russia will likely respond, according to the Financial Times and the people that they interviewed, with irresponsible rhetoric that includes some nuclear saber rattling, as well as a few larger strikes on Ukraine. Basically, according to the officials and the analysts interviewed by the Financial Times, Russia's response to Tomahawk missiles operated by the United States, they're not making any secret to this. The Financial Times is clearly saying that the United States military will go to Ukraine. They're not going to waste their time pretending to train Ukrainian officials, right? The narrative that Ukraine officials launch scout missiles or Storm Shadow or TACOMs or HIMARS, where we've been told that it's Ukrainian officials that were trained on these or Ukrainian pilots in F-16s, whatever. They're not even going to go with that nonsense, right? They're not even going to pretend that is what's going on. They're saying American officials, American contractors will be in Ukraine. We're not going to waste our time training Ukrainian officials. We just want to get to launching the missiles. That's basically what the Financial Times is saying. And they're saying there's going to be words from Russia. That's it. And so let me read you what I have posted on X about this article from the Financial Times and what looks like to be the decision from the Trump administration to send 20 to 50 Tomahawk missiles to Ukraine. So I posted this on X. Tomahawks to Ukraine accomplishes two important goals for the United States. Goal number one, it further normalizes U.S.-NATO direct attacks into Russia. In 3 years, the U.S. has accomplished what was seen as taboo for 80 years. It is acceptable for the U.S. to directly strike Russia. This is a precedent that will be leveraged in the future. And point number two, or goal number two, it further normalizes Western boots on the ground in Ukraine. The U.S. is making no secret of the fact that they will be in Ukraine operating the missiles. U.S.-NATO boots on the ground are no longer off limits. It started out with Storm Shadows, right? UK Storm Shadows and Scout missiles with U.S.-NATO targeting and satellite intel and most likely UK or French or NATO military officials operating those Scalp and Storm Shadow missiles. You had HIMARS, which has now been pretty much agreed that the HIMARS, for the most part, are also operated by NATO mercenaries, if you want to call them that, right? So that's how it started, and it started with these strikes into Donbass and into Crimea, and Russia rationalizing this. The Putin administration has kind of rationalized this with pre-2014. Russia is off limits, but post-2014 is okay. That's fair game. That's how they've kind of rationalized the initial attacks into Donbass and into Crimea. And then you got the storm shadows and the scout missiles into Russia, into the border towns of Russia. And then you had the HIMARS as well into the border towns of Russia. We're talking about Belgorod and Bryansk and Kursk, the Kursk region. And then you got the NATO operating the drones and NATO providing targeting for the drones into Russia. And then you had the Biden attackums. Right. So they're escalating every little bit, step by step. They're just escalating just a little bit. Right. From Donbass to Crimea to the border towns, from scalp and storm shadows to satellite intel and drones to HIMARS to attackums. Right. And that was how Biden left it. So Biden left it with attackums operated by the United States, launched into Russia. Right. And now you have the Tomahawks. Okay, so you have the Tomahawks. So the attackums were what, 300 kilometers? And Russia said, okay, attackums, we'll handle them. And they did. We'll handle them and we'll knock them down. Some got through. Some did damage. The scalps, some got through. Some did damage. Actually, the scalps and the storm shadows did a lot of damage in Crimea. But Russia got on top of those. Russia got on top of the attackums, and now you have the Tomahawks, which is the next escalation. But all of this, point number one, is that the step by step, month by month, year by year, it has now become normal and accepted to launch strikes for the West, for the United States, for NATO to launch strikes into Russia, and for Russia to not push back on these strikes into Russia. So anyway, that's point number one that I'm making. I hope that wasn't too long. But point number two is that it has now become accepted for boots on the ground, for Western boots on the ground, because with the Tomahawks, there's no more there's no more secrets about U.S. operating these systems anymore. They're not even trying to hide it, I guess is my point. The Financial Times and U.S. officials are just saying it openly that U.S. contractors, U.S. military officials will be in Ukraine because we don't want to waste any time. That's what the Financial Times is saying. This can be deployed quickly, and we're not going to waste time training Ukrainian troops. We're just not going to waste that time anymore. We're just going to send U.S. contractors to Ukraine, and they're going to launch these missiles. So before, they were trying to hide it. Storm shadows, they were trying to hide it. Scout missiles, they were trying to hide it. Drones, they were trying to hide it. HIMARS, attackums. There was this game of trying to hide collective West U.S. involvement in Ukraine, right? We're not involved in the war. That was what they were always telling us. We're not involved. NATO is not at war with Russia. We're just helping Ukraine defend itself. That's what they were telling us. Now the masks are off, and now they're saying, you know what? We don't want to waste any more time training Ukrainian soldiers. We just don't want to waste that time anymore. So what we're going to do is just send U.S. contractors to Ukraine. So it's now okay for U.S. military officials or NATO military officials to be in Ukraine. So two big taboos have been broken, have been whittled away at, right? Step by step, they've been these red lines, if they were red lines, have been crossed, and at each crossing, they saw that Russia did nothing, and now we're at the point of long-range missile strikes and boots on the ground. And it's not that the Russians are not going to get on top of the Tomahawks. I'm sure the Russians are going to get on top of the Tomahawks when they're fired, and I'm sure they're going to knock the Tomahawks down and all of these things. Yes, they're old missiles. Yes, they're slow. Yes, they're not going to change the trajectory of the conflict. The Financial Times in this article even says that the Tomahawks are not going to change the trajectory of the conflict, but that's not the point. That is not the point to all of this. The point is the step by step escalation, right? That's the point. That's the point to all of this. Step by step, you break down whatever Russian deterrence you thought existed. You call that bluff, and you understand that you can push even further. And you know, in 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, you're in a much stronger position if you do end up in conflict with Russia, because all of these red lines, all of these taboos have been trashed. So anyway, enough of that. Trump also, he a little bit of clown world now from the serious and the tragic to the hilarious and the crazy, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what you would say with this Trump statement. But Trump said that his tariffs helped bring a war, help bring an end to the war between Iran and Pakistan. Yeah. Iran and Pakistan is what Trump said.
As an example, if you look at Pakistan and Iran, I told them I was in the midst of negotiating a trade deal with Iran, and Pakistan was going to be in line. And because of tariffs, they all want to negotiate much differently. We were making a good deal. And then I heard that they're shooting at each other. And I said during one of my conversations, are you guys going to go to war? Two nuclear powers we are thinking about. I said, here's the deal. You go to war, I'm going to put a 200% tariff. I'm going to stop you from doing any business in the United States. I said it to both of them. Within 24 hours, the war ended. That would have been a nuclear war. And again, the prime minister of Pakistan, who was here too.
So Trump said that this could have been a nuclear conflict between Iran and Pakistan. He actually said that the United States was negotiating with Iran on tariffs, right? They were negotiating a tariff trade deal with Iran. And it was his pressure of tariffs that he placed on these two countries at war that ended up stopping the possible nuclear war between Iran and Pakistan. So you have Iran and Pakistan, you have Pakistan and India, you have Cambodia and Azerbaijan, you have Albania and Azerbaijan, you have Armenia and Azerbaijan, you have Armenia and Azerbaijan, right? So you have all of these wars that Trump has helped bring an end to. And Trump said that he is confident that he will be able to bring an end to the conflict in Ukraine as well. So on Venezuela, this has a lot of people talking, his comments on Venezuela, which indicate that a regime change is coming. It's coming very, very soon. Trump revealed that he has given authorization to the CIA to operate in Venezuela, which means that the CIA is currently operating in Venezuela. Whenever the United States says they've given authorization to the CIA to begin operating in Venezuela, it means that the CIA is in Venezuela, has been in Venezuela for some time, and they are laying down the groundwork for the regime change once they start striking at Maduro and they start launching missiles into Venezuela. They start the decapitation operation of Maduro and his officials. The CIA has been working to get the regime change in place and for the chaos to begin once the U.S. starts launching the strikes into Venezuela. From the New York Times, Trump administration authorizes covert CIA action in Venezuela. The development comes as the U.S. military is drawing up options for President Trump to consider, including possible strikes inside the country. And then Trump also said that the United States controls the sea around Venezuela. They have control of the sea. And now they are going to look to do some land operations. That is what he said. Yep. That is what he said. He was asked about the CIA. A reporter asked him about authorizing the CIA. Have you, Mr. President, authorized the CIA to operate in Venezuela? And Trump said, well, I would never tell you that. He said, well, I would never answer that kind of question. And then he went on to say, yeah, I've authorized the CIA, right? He said, I wouldn't answer that kind of question. I'd be pretty stupid to answer that question about authorizing the CIA to operate in Venezuela. But I've authorized the CIA to operate in Venezuela, and I like it. I like it a lot. That is what Trump said. So look, the operation in Venezuela is happening. It is going to happen. And the CIA is there. The sea operation is unfolding. Not even little sailboats or fishing boats are allowed to leave the coast of Venezuela. By the way, it was reported that yesterday's strike on that boat resulted in I believe two citizens from, I want to say, Trinidad were actually killed on that boat. I could be wrong about the country, But it was not just people from Venezuela. Of the six people that were killed, it was four Venezuelans and two, I believe, citizens of Trinidad. But I could be wrong about that. It was citizens from other countries who allegedly had nothing to do with drugs. I mean, the boat was at a standstill. And Trump was saying that these boats move fast. So he was speaking to the media. He says, these boats move really fast, and they're moving very fast towards the United States. And the reason I've authorized the CIA to conduct operations in Venezuela is because I'm sick and tired of Venezuela dumping all of these people in the United States, these drug dealers and all of these people in the United States, and they give us their worst. You know, when Trump goes off on these statements about giving us their worst and they're sending drugs to the United States, and I'm not going to have any of it, and I'm not going to allow it. So that's why I've authorized the CIA to begin operations in Venezuela, and that's why we're doing what we're doing with the boats. And he said the boats move really fast. That boat was not moving at all. If you look at the video, that boat was at a standstill when they destroyed that boat. But you know, I thought that Trump has the border on lockdown. If he has the border on lockdown, then what's the problem? Right? Well, what are you so worried about? Even if Venezuela is trying to send their worst to the United States, I thought you had the border on lockdown. I thought no one is getting through the border because of your strength. So then what is the problem? Why do you have to launch operations against Venezuela? Anyway, we know what this is all about. It's all about oil. And the Nobel Prize winner, Maria Corina Machado, told Trump's son, Trump Jr., yesterday, come and take our oil, man. Forget about Saudi Arabia. We got oil. Come and take it. Just overthrow Maduro. Put me in power and come and take our oil. That is why I got the Nobel Peace Prize. Don't you know it? I got the Nobel Peace Prize because I'm all about giving oil to the United States of America. So anyway, that is Trump's statements on Venezuela. Budanov, the Intel chief, the Android AI Budanov, he said that Russia would have lost the conflict in Ukraine if it was not for North Korea. That is what Budanov said. If it was not for North Korea and their help, Russia would have lost this war a long, long time ago, according to Budanov. That was his statement. Ursula in Serbia. As the United States is escalating in Venezuela, about to conduct regime change in Venezuela, as they're escalating in Ukraine and in Russia, we have Ursula in Serbia issuing an ultimatum to Serbia, to the people of Serbia, to Vucic. Basically, her ultimatum is stop supporting Russia and get into the EU. It's that simple. You want to get into the EU so we can destroy you even further? You want access into the European Union, which will further destroy your country and your economy and your sovereignty? Well, if you want to get into the EU, Serbia, President Vucic, you have to stop your support of Russia. Period. Full stop. End of story. That means sanctions on Russia. That means no relations with Russia. You have to cut off your ties with Russia. And we demand that you cut off your ties with Russia in order to enter the European Union. Ursula von der Leyen issues ultimatum to EU aspirant. The European Commission president said Serbia must align with the bloc's anti-Russian sanctions if it wants to become a member. According to Politico, von der Leyen warned Serbia, time to get real about joining the EU. The EU is losing patience with Belgrade as it maintains ties with Russia. I've said this a million times. I will say it again. When it comes to the European Union, it demands 100% compliance. 100%, not 99%, not 90%. Not we're going to have good relations with Europe and we're going to have good relations with BRICS or good relations with Russia and China. No. If you want to be part of the European Union and if you want us as the European Union to completely destroy your country while enriching your politicians and your oligarchs, right? We're going to enrich your oligarch class and your political class, but we're going to destroy your country. If you want any part of this, then we demand 100% compliance, 100%. And that means no relations with Russia, no relations with China, no relations with BRICS. That is over. So that was her ultimatum to Serbia. And we got the reports about Argentina yesterday that the United States is not going to give them $40 billion, but the United States, according to various reports, is looking at bailing out Argentina to the tune of $40 billion. Double the $20 billion and make it $40 billion. Of course, it's contingent on the midterm elections going Milei's way. So to the people of Argentina, if you want the $40 billion, not $20 billion, if you want the $40 billion, you better vote for Milei's party, Milei's support. Support Milei, you get $40 billion, not $20 billion. $40 billion, of course, it's got to get paid back, right? It's got to get paid back in the forms of assets and resources and energy and land. It's going to get paid back. Make no mistake about it. This is on top of the IMF loans that you already have, right? So if you want this money, vote Milei. That's the ultimatum, the condition to the $40 billion. Why not make it just a cool $50 billion? I mean, while you're at it, why $40 billion? Just make it $50 billion and there you go. All right. So we have that news story and we have the update, an update on Nord Stream. Not only is Poland trying to stop the German investigation, if you even want to call it that. It's not even a real investigation. It's a half-assed German investigation into Nord Stream. But it's not only Poland that is trying to sabotage the investigation into who did Nord Stream. It is also now Italy. And we got the reports that Italy has halted the extradition of the Nord Stream sabotage suspect. We're talking about Sergei K. They have halted his extradition to Germany. So Poland is protecting someone, right? By halting the extradition of Vladimir Z. That's who Poland has in custody, who was one of the guys that did Nord Stream. And Italy has Sergei K. in custody, another guy who allegedly was part of the Nord Stream pipeline sabotage. Poland is telling Germany to stop the investigation. Tusk is saying it's a good thing that Nord Stream was blown up, Germany, so just let it go, stop investigating, and we don't want to extradite Vladimir Z. That's what Poland is telling Germany. And now Italy is telling Germany, we're not going to extradite Sergei K. at the moment. So Germany, you need to call off your half-ass investigation into Nord Stream. Who are they protecting? Who could they possibly be protecting in all of this? And keep in mind, as I have said many times, it's not even a real investigation from Germany, right? As if you have to worry about Germany implicating certain masters that it has, right? As if you have to worry that Germany is going to turn on its master, on its patron. But anyway, I guess they don't want to take any chances, right? Let's not even take any chances. Who knows? Maybe the investigation might help bolster AfD a bit more, right? Maybe exposing what happened to Nord Stream, or just even bringing it up bolsters AfD's popularity, right? Maybe that's what they're thinking. Let's not even bring it up. It's been four years. Let's just forget about it. Just forget about Nord Stream, everybody. Let's forget about Nord Stream and focus on that good US LNG, right? Forget about the bad, evil Russian gas, which is no good, blah, blah, Russian gas. And let's focus on that tasty, good, fresh U.S. Expensive. It's expensive. But, you know, if you want premium gas, you pay a premium, right? Let's focus on that U.S. LNG. Forget about the cheap Russian gas. Cheap is not good. What's good is expensive, premium. Premium gas. Gucci gas, Prada gas, right? Anyway, let's go into a clown world, a couple of clown worlds, two clown worlds. Kamala Harris was at some event, speaking, getting interviewed by somebody. I have no idea who this is. I have no idea what this event was, but Kamala Harris said, some people have said I was the most qualified candidate ever to run for president.
That is and a decent. But that is a decent resume. But go ahead.
But there. Well, some people have actually said I was the most qualified candidate ever to run for president.
I like the some people say. Very nice. But go ahead.
I'm just speaking fact.
Yeah.
No doubt. No doubt. Kamala Harris, clown world. And we have the foreign minister. I believe she's the foreign minister of Finland, Elina Valtonen, who showed up in Tbilisi. She posted on X, peaceful protesters have gathered in front of the parliament building in Tbilisi, Georgia, to voice their concern over the repressive direction of their country. They have every right to democracy, to freedom of expression, and basic human rights. We are here to support them. So her complaint in her message, her complaint is that the Georgia Dream, the government in Georgia does not allow Georgians to freely express themselves, and they don't allow Georgians to protest and to assemble and voice their grievances. And she's saying all of this as Georgians are in front of the parliament freely protesting, right? And she even says that Georgians are carrying, EU flags, NATO flags, and even Georgian flags. Even Georgian flags are carrying. And the Georgian government doesn't allow them. We're here to protest the Georgian government, which does not allow people to speak freely and to assemble and protest here in front of a protest.
I'm in Tbilisi in front of the parliament building. There's a peaceful demonstration gathering here slowly. A lot of people coming here waving their flags of the European Union, of NATO, apparently also the Finnish flag, but most importantly the Georgian flag. The reason is that these people are concerned about the direction that this country has been taking away the basic liberties of people, starting with the freedom of expression and the freedom of assembly. Needless to say, these people deserve all of these rights, and we are here to support them.
This foreign minister from Finland, I don't know, she gives Kaja Kallas a run for her money. She really does. You listen to the stuff that she says, I mean, she gives Kaja Kallas a run for her money, the foreign minister in Finland. But you know what? The lesson in all of this, here's the lesson to all of this. The EU will never give up. The globalists will never give up. The United States will never give up. They will never give up on Georgia. They will never give up on Armenia. They will never give up on Serbia. They will never give up on Project Ukraine. They will never, ever, ever, ever give up. Okay? That's the lesson to, I think, this entire video. And you know what? The countries of the global majority, of the global South, they continue to fall for the same old tricks over and over and over again. Anyway, that is the video. I did not say like this video. I forgot again. So like this video, subscribe to this channel. Check us out on X. Check us out on Rumble and Telegram. I will see everybody tomorrow. Take care.